Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Ben.
My name is Noel. I wanted to work in a Fred Durst reference in here, some kind of Limp Bizkit nod because of what was happening off mic that I thought was delightful.
Yes, super producer Casey Pegram actually does most of our intros. They're just off air. And Casey, you queued us up when we asked if we were rolling with a specific reference. Is that correct?
That is true. And I leave it to the listener to deduce what the connection there would have been with the concept of rolling. But I will say that Fred Durst, back behind the camera in the director's chair.
Oh, my gosh.
He's got a new movie coming out.
Oh, what is it?
I don't know what it's called.
It's called The Obsesso.
Yeah, and it's got John Travolta in some very interesting...
he's making some interesting choices.
Yes, yes.
Both hair-wise, accessory-wise, and... let's say, what's that? I don't know. I don't want to say it on the show, but you might remember in the movie Tropic Thunder.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise plays a character.
Makes a certain choice.
And makes a certain choice and is recommended that you don't go full that thing.
True.
In this film, John Travolta seems to be making that choice.
I agree. So Weird. Maybe something to catch like on video or something.
I think so.
Curiosity.
No, that's not actually what it's called. It's called like the nut job. It's called something like that.
Well, it sort of looks like a rip off of Big Fan, right? That Patton Oswalt movie.
Totally.
Okay.
I think it might be called The Fanatic. Maybe.
Are you, Casey, are you accusing Fred Durst of being unoriginal?
Well, I would never say that.
I hope not.
Invented the irresistible blend of rap and rock music.
I saw a great meme where it said Fred Durst explaining rap metal to executives, and it was that like Always Sunny, like conspiracy pegboard meme.
Right. Right.
But
Lopez,
with Fred Durst's face with the backwards red ball cap superimposed
awesome.
On it.
Love it.
Just back to the reference. This is something that Fred Durst would do in perpetuity. He rolls in perpetuity.
It is true. That's the philosophy of Durst.
And while we are talking about the philosophy of Durst, while we're talking about this film, which none of us have seen, to be fair, we also find that Fred Durst has something in common with the subject of today's story, which is that historically, he, like many other people in positions of power, he's done some dumb things or ill-advised things because there was no one around to be anything less than a sycophant or a yes man. Today's story takes place not in the wild frontiers of rap rock, but back in the 1300s, on August 26, 1346, an English and Welsh army met a French force in, Casey, could you help me out with this one? It's spelled C-R-E-C-Y.
I'm going to say Crécy, something like that.
Sounds so good when he says it. Casey on the case.
On the absolute case, yeah. Crécy.
He's got it.
He got it. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely not in the wilds of rap rock, that undiscovered country, but it is in something of a Wild West kind of frontier, because we had the King of Bohemia, King John, who joined this conflict when the English and the Welsh met the French forces at
Crécy.
But here's the thing. Back in 1340, John had been on a mission, a crusade, where he had lost his sight completely.
Yeah, the conflict here in 1346 had some twists that no one saw coming, especially not John. He had been a warrior for most of his life, and he did not let being blinded slow his role. You see, John of Bohemia was born in 1296, a member of the Luxembourg dynasty, and he became the Count of Luxembourg in 1310. And he married a woman named Elixa of the ruling dynasty of Bohemia. Her father died without a male heir, and so John inherited the kingdom and was crowned in 1311. But he had really close bonds with France, such that he had sent his son to be raised in the Parisian court rather than in Prague. And, you know, Noel, as you mentioned, he was on a crusade when he lost his sight completely, but he wasn't blinded by enemy forces. It turns out that he had a genetic condition. This caused him to go blind on crusade in Lithuania, but his reputation seemed to bear the hit just fine. There were no challenges to his rule. He was still king. He was still considered a knight. He was still considered a warrior. And so when the battle there at
Crécy
occurred, John was dead set on going to the conflict. But how exactly did he wind up there? What led to him joining the fray?
Okay, so here's the thing. Edward III's what, team? Crew?
Band?
Wrecking crew? Yeah, band. Band of brethren, of knighted brethren. Sworded, gilded, knighted brethren had absolutely obliterated one of the most well-equipped armies in all of Europe, which belonged to King Philip VI of France. And he did this remarkably effectively, without losing too many men. But the ones that died on the French side of things were pretty well regarded, and they kind of bore the brunt of this, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, there were
For
the French. There were a lot of casualties on that side, and the subject of today's story is probably the most well-known, most famous of those fatalities, that is blind King John of Bohemia. And it's weird because he's the King of Bohemia, so how is he involved in this conflict between the French King, Philip, and between Edward of England? Here's how it went down. So Philip reaches out to blind John from Luxembourg and says, join me in this fight against this guy, Edward, in England. And John at the time was hanging out with his son Charles, who had just been crowned as the King of Germany. So John goes to meet Philip in Paris on the 13th of August, and you know, they crew up their forces and they go after Edward and they ride toward the coast. So he really is pulled into the battle because of his friendship with the French King, Philip, who, as you said earlier, Noel, his forces are just getting waxed left and right. So he needs all the help he can get. But historians only know one popular tale about any Bohemian involvement in this battle, and that is what John of Bohemia did when he finally got to the battlefield. Because look, he's got experience. He's a smart guy.
He's got moxie, more than a little.
Mm-hmm. He's got what we would call chutzpah, but he also literally cannot see, which is a, you know, for many people, that would mean that they absolutely couldn't participate in riding a horse, much less riding one into a fight.
But he would have none of that. He would not be kowtowed to. He would not be treated with any kind of special consideration. He wielded his sword with aplomb, often swinging wide and having his men kind of have to duck and cover. And again, just very, very quickly and importantly, not to sound ableist in any way. I mean, having no sight is obviously a very serious condition that requires a lot of life changes. The thing that's interesting about this is that John refused to make those changes and operated in the manner of sort of a megalomaniacal monarch existing in a bubble and refusing to do anything outside of what he believes he should be doing.
Right. And at this point, he's used to not having sight. He was blinded years ago by the time 1346 rolls around.
What I'm saying is he's expecting others to make concessions to him rather than, you know, maybe thinking it wise not to participate in certain activities that might be best, afforded to the sighted.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And it leads to what is romanticized as this heroic battlefield moment. The story goes like this. Here's the story that we know from a couple of different sources. Apparently, King John had his knights physically tie their horses to his and ride forward toward the English all together, so these guys could kind of help him steer. And he said that no Bohemian, even one who was blind, could be said to have ever run from a fight. We have a couple of medieval sources. One, the Chronicle of Prague, specifically quotes John as saying, "Far be it that the king of Bohemia should run away. Instead, take me to the place where the noise of the battle is the loudest. The Lord will be with us. Nothing to fear. Just take good care of my son." Beautiful. Oscar moment.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. Like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
So yeah, I mean, you know, we've got this image of these knights riding alongside John, kind of helping steer his steed a bit. We have several different accounts. We have Czech sources that say that there were only two that were tethered to this horse, and then we have English folks citing many, many more. What we can say for certain, and this comes from a fantastic article on Historical Honey. You know, we always say articles are fantastic. Is it me? Some of them aren't fantastic. I don't know why I always say that.
The ones that aren't fantastic shouldn't make it to the air.
That's probably a good point, Ben. That's a very good point. This one is, in fact, fantastic, coming from historicalhoney.com, and saying that what we do know, despite the differences in accounts, is that he did head directly into the fray.
Yeah, you'll hear some differences in an English source versus a Czech source. Those differences are primarily going to be about how many knights were tethered to King John. Was it a bunch or was it only two? And you'll also hear about when this famous charge occurred. The English sources say that the charge came in the climactic moments of the fighting, but the Czech chronicle says that he charged pretty much after the French had run away. The thing here is the English source, Froissart, got his information directly from the English court, and the Czech chronicler got their information directly from the Czech court, maybe even John's son, Charles, directly. And so the big question here is, which side can we believe? Does either source have kind of an ulterior motive? Did the English writer want John of Bohemia's death to seem like it was justified so that nobody on the English side was charged with the unethical act of killing a blind man? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And it's not clear from the record which one of those is more accurate.
And yeah, and would John have deliberately ridden to certain death? It's weird because here's what we learned, that there were already a bunch of dead and dying horses on the ground because they had practiced, you know, early forms of trench warfare. There were pits dug in the ground. There were people shooting arrows well beforehand. Still, even with that kind of littering the battlefield, they probably could have made the charge. So we know it actually happened.
For sure, for sure. We do have a lot of other fun historical accounts of this this deed, this charge. One of my personal favorites is by the medieval chronicler. That's a great job title. It seems much more important than just a historian. Ben, you pronounced this earlier. I believe it's Froissart.
Yeah, that's what we went with.
Yeah, that's right. And he wrote around 1370 in great detail about this event. And I don't know, it sounds pretty poetic and larger than life, but I want to read another one. Ben, you did one earlier and did a great job. So here's my attempt. When he understood the order of the battle, he said to them about him, "Where is the Lord Charles, my son?" His men said, "Sir, we cannot tell. We think he be fighting." Then he said, "Sirs, ye are my men, companions and friends in this journey. I require you to bring me so far forward that I may strike one stroke with my sword." They said they would do his commandment, and to the intent that they should not lose him in the press, they tied all their reins of their bridles around to other and set the king before to accomplish his desire. Boom.
And so as we can tell, both of these accounts are written, you know, just a couple decades after the actual charge. So there still would have been living people around with firsthand knowledge of this. And this is one of the crowning achievements of this guy's life. This is the kind of death, at least the way it's depicted, that many warriors would envy.
Absolutely. Know? And the way the scene is set by Frossard, it sounds to me like the men are acting in like pure solidarity and they respect this king, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope I didn't make him sound buffoonish earlier. I mean, this is absolutely not just the work of a megalomaniacal madman who's totally out of touch. I think he very much wants to go into battle with his men, right? He didn't have to do that. He could have stayed in like his in his tent, you know, be carried around in a litter or something like that. But instead, he wanted to, you know, dive in.
Also, we have to ask ourselves, could they have refused him? Because he is, after all, the king, you know? It reminds me of that scene in Lord of the Rings in the film adaptation when Aragorn is giving that speech at the Black Gate. And he's like, a day may come when the courage of men fails, et cetera, et cetera. But it is not this day.
No, it is not. Makes me think of the Braveheart speech.
Exactly.
Kind of.
Exactly. It's like its own genre of speech.
It is.
And this is a real version of one. The weird thing about John, though, is that his story doesn't stop when he physically passes away. His remains get moved around a lot. He was first interred in the Old Abbey in Luxembourg City. And then the monastery where he was interred was destroyed in 1543, and so they moved his body to what they called the New Abbey.
Then dug up again during the hellish time that was the French Revolution, and given to the Boke family, who I believe were partners in a pretty well known company at the time called Villeroy and Boke. What did they do, Ben? I'm interested, just for the sake of our audience here who wants to know things. They could just Google it. Let's see.
They sell flatware. They sell, you know, plates, cutlery, dining collections, ceramics.
Oh, it's very much still around, though.
Yeah,
it's still in place. It's like very fine. Well, maybe not fine, but it's certainly, you can buy it at Macy's. It's not like, you know, fine china, but it ain't cheap. Let's see, a set of Villeroy and Boke French garden plates is $160. That's, you know, middle of the road, but I bet back in the day it was more pricey. But they hid these remains in their attic.
The Boke family.
The Boke family did.
And there they stayed in the attic or in the area until 1833 when the Prussian king, Frederick William III, visited the Rhineland, and a member of the Boke family, Jean-Francois, gave him the relics. And this wasn't just like a weird gift. There was a reason that Frederick William would be interested in these, and that's because he claimed that he was descended from John of Bohemia. So this felt personal to him, and he took them back to Germany.
Was he cremated? Or like, I'm sorry, I pronounced that like a real jerk.
No, you're fine.
I'm fine with it, though. I'm going to lean into it. So if you, you know, presumably he was cremated because they would have had to store his remains in some easily transportable form. I guess it could have been his decomposed bones, but that would have taken time.
I think maybe they put his bones in a container, you know, because so much time has passed. 1833, there's not going to be any flesh left.
That's true. They must have just dug him up. You're right. He was buried properly, and then they dug him up and then just, you know, put his bones in a pile and just carted them around.
Side note, I have to say, We've been doing this show for a couple of years now, and it's our anniversary.
Is it today?
I don't know if it's today, but we're very close. Christopher Hasiotis pointed it out to us earlier. So off air, we just looked it up because Christopher is way more on top of it than the three of us, and it is actually the 2-year anniversary of this show sometime this week.
So, can you believe it?
Happy anniversary, man.
Happy anniversary, too. What'd you get me?
I got you a hat the last time I was traveling.
The last two times.
Yeah. I'm making it a thing.
I love it. I love hats. Speaking of which, just the hat that I'm wearing right now from Fort Mount Hood, the Timberline Lodge. Mm-hmm. That's where the Overlook Hotel is.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
That's where she saw that Shining shirt I was wearing the other day. Casey got that there too at the Timberline Lodge gift shop at the Portland Airport, which is one of the best airports for gift shopping I've ever been to in my life.
Thanks, man.
That's the one they use for the exterior shot in the movie?
I think so.
Yeah.
It must be.
It does not have the hedge maze.
That's right.
Yeah. The interior one is different.
Right. It's the Stanley Hotel.
Also, happy anniversary to you, Casey.
Yes.
I'm just spreading the cheers.
Oh, yeah. For the show.
For the show, yeah.
I was like, I have no personal anniversaries of which to speak.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't call you out on air like that. It's a showversary. So also, thanks to everyone who has been lending us an ear these past 2 years.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com. Here's what happened. They took John's bones, his remains, and they built a chapel just to house those bones. And everything seemed fine. It seemed he had found his final resting place until, that is, 1945. The Nazi Party in Germany is just about to lose the war. The government of Luxembourg, the way HistoryNaked.com in a fantastic article describes it, is that Luxembourg quietly liberated John of Bohemia.
I love quiet liberations. Those are the best kind.
They robbed his grave.
Ah.
That's what they did. They took his remains and they brought him back to Luxembourg City's Notre Dame Cathedral, and that's where they are now. But how did he actually die?
I don't know, but Ben, I have a question for you. Do you think it requires religious belief to be at all concerned with how people's remains are treated?
No, not at all.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm.
No. So you think you would be concerned for how someone else's remains are treated based on respect for their religious beliefs? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
That's part of it, but also if they have any living relatives, I would want to avoid that. Oh, and that's the thread I almost lost. Thanks for bringing that
up. Of course.
Got sidetracked a little in the anniversary thing. Over the course of this show, we've run into several cases where people just keep playing with or attempting to possess the physical remains of famous folks, like that one guy whose head disappeared. What was it? Lord Nelson?
Lord Nelson. Horatio Nelson.
That's
Wasn't that
it.
His name?
Yeah.
Forget it. He was a sea captain.
And what happened? His head disappeared?
I you know, Ben, I just remember he was pickled in brandy.
That's right.
They transported his body. He died in a very, very similar fashion to our hero today, only he could see, and he was shot on the deck of his ship. But he was there neck and neck with his men in the fray of battle, knowing full well that he might well take a bullet, and he did, and he died. And then they pickled his body in a keg of – it was rum, actually. It wasn't
it was
brandy.
Rum.
But then there were all these spooky tales about maybe they drank the rum.
I believe
a drink is named after a rum-based drink is named after him or something like that. But
it's is it really that different from drinking the tequila with the worm in it? I mean, other than it's a human body. This is getting dark. Never mind. I'm getting the Halloween effect. As we can rightly assume, back in the 1300s, there wasn't too much in the way of what we would call forensic science. So it wasn't until 1990 that someone examined the skeleton of the blind king of Bohemia, and they were able to discern more details about how he died on that day in August. And the details, I got to tell you, they're pretty graphic. If you are a person who is averse to descriptions of violence or blood and gore and so on, you may want to skip the next couple seconds. Okay, here's what happened. The examination found that someone had stabbed him in one of his eyes. Someone had pushed some kind of weapon directly into his skull. They could see a kind of a triangular cross-section. So there was this void, this triangle-shaped void in his skull.
Jesus.
And that wasn't it. He had other stabs as well, right?
Yeah, no, he very much did get dogpiled on. He had one to his left shoulder blade that went into his chest, probably hit some serious important guts in there, vital organs. But that might have been the kill shot, right? It wouldn't have been a super protracted death, but probably wouldn't have been instant either. And then we've got the final insult to injury kind of wound, don't we?
Yeah. Turns out his right hand had been severed, and they could see three different blows from a blade. Somebody completely cut off his right hand, most likely to make it more convenient to steal his rings. So instead of working them off the finger, they just cut off his hand and kept going. And this could probably be, this sort of practice could probably be an episode all its own, because wartime scavenging, up to and including the looting of cadavers, was very common at this time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it continued to be common in, like, you know, World War One and World War Two. Bodies were often looted. We even did a story about dental work that was done exclusively with looted teeth and fillings and things like that from fallen soldiers during the Civil War?
During the Civil War, and from other countries during that time. It's where we originated that world-famous, ridiculous historian phrase, straight seahorse teeth.
Yeah, that's true. That episode was absolutely straight seahorse teeth, and I love seeing that one catch on, if even in a small way, on the internet. So, yeah, I'm picturing this scene, Ben. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see this dramatized, full guts and glory and all. I mean, it's, you know, because like, there's that moment where he topples off his horse, and then the horde swarms him, you know. I mean, what a melee, you know. I mean, that would be an absolute horror show.
Slow motion as the music swells, and then maybe we hear, this is so common in action films, historical action films, maybe we hear in the distance the song, like his wife softly singing a love song.
I'm a big fan of the slow motion scream that has like, the audio is almost in slow motion too. It's like,
and in the background there's some like, for England.
Exactly. Down. Back to Lord of the Rings. It reminds me of that one where Pippin is singing that delightful song
while the
men are being slaughtered and the weird king is eating his gross chicken and grapes.
Or, yeah, God. And as the misophonia that I have just drives me insane watching them suck on those tiny tomatoes.
No!
It's so gross.
That's right. They weren't grapes. They were grape tomatoes.
Oh, man. And then do you remember also in Game of Thrones, when Podrick starts singing that weird song about Jenny dancing with her ghost?
Yeah.
It's got that vibe. Yeah, you're right. This could be excellent fodder for an historical drama. And you know what? If there already is one, go ahead, feel free to hip us to it. And so, pending messages from studio producers the world over, this concludes our episode on the strange, heroic, larger-than-life end of Blind John, the King of Bohemia. But it does not mean the end of the show. We will be back very soon with more, you guessed it, ridiculous people, places, and events from the span of human history. In the meantime, we'd like to hear your stories about these larger-than-life deaths. You know what I've been really into? I think maybe we talked about it earlier. I have always been fascinated with the stories of someone's famous last words. Often, I feel like they're made up.
Oh, clearly. You know? Right? Yeah.
Like, there's the one with Oscar Wilde where, this one I always thought was true, where he says, either the wallpaper goes or I do, because he hated the wallpaper when he was expiring, and then he died. Che Guevara said, shoot, fool, you are only killing a man.
My personal favorite is Ronald Reagan's deathbed final words, which is, win one for the Gipper. Remember when Reagan said that when he died?
I'm sure he, I feel like most people's famous last words are probably, so I feel like we should just count the thing before they had that death rattle. There was another one, I can't remember who said it, but someone said, I should have never switched from scotch to martinis.
That sounds like something someone would say in a voice like this.
It does.
Whoever's got that voice, it was him.
Rip Torn?
Yeah, probably.
So if you want to let us know some of your favorite noble deaths, some of your favorite famous last words, reach out. We're all over the internet. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram, not just as a show, but as people ourselves.
Yeah, we're actually human people that do things outside of this podcast shipping container that we find ourselves in so often. You can find me on Instagram exclusively. I occupy no other social media real estate on the internet, except occasional Facebook feed trolling for fake news. You can find me on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown.
And you can find me on various adventures and misadventures here and abroad on Instagram at Ben Bolin. You can also find me on Twitter, where I am at Ben Bolin HSW. My office hours are weird. They're pretty much 24/7. Always feel free to drop by and say hello. I can't wait to hear what people send. I can't wait to hear what kind of famous last words people send. And you know what, you guys, Casey, Noel, we should have a party at some point, you know, like a little soiree kind of thing.
I'm going to go grab a beer after work today. If you guys want to come, we can pour one out for the Gipper.
I have to catch a flight.
Boo. Next time.
Next time.
Big thanks to super producer Casey Pegram, Christopher Hasiotis here in spirit, Alex Williams, who composed our theme.
Also, thanks, of course, to Gabe Luzier. Thanks to Yves Jeffcoat. Thanks to Jonathan Strickland, the Quister, who isn't here for the anniversary.
I know.
He's been hot taken on Facebook, though. I feel like he's still here. Have you seen him?
I have seen
him. Ridiculous historians.
He said some things, some very choice things about you and your vocal warm-up regimen.
And you as well. Yeah. He went off.
He feels ways about things.
He does feel ways about things.
I think he's getting a little punchy since we haven't been including him. He might be feeling a little left out. So I think we should bring him back into the fold.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.